From New York City, the American Broadcasting Company brings you Issues and Answers. Today, the two outstanding spokesmen for opposing Republican viewpoints, conservative Senator Barry Goldwater of Arizona and liberal Senator Jacob K. Javits of New York, debate the present and future role of their party as the loyal opposition to the new frontier. Senator Goldwater, what are the issues?
Well, for the purposes of this broadcast, the issues are the Republican Party and our chances for victory in 1962 and, of course, the subsequent chances for 1964. Now, I think they're exceedingly bright for 1962 in view of the recent triumphs we've had in Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and particularly in Texas. But I think that the question that revolves around this whole problem of the Republican Party might get down to the program that we're going to follow. Are we merely going to oppose, or are we going to have be able to offer a substitute program for the wild ideas of the Kennedy administration? I am hopeful that this discussion will bring out possibilities along that line.
Senator Javits, where do you stand?
Well, I believe that the real issue is the two-party system and its vital continuance in our country. I believe my party has to avoid the pitfall of getting so far over to the right that it will lose contact with the mainstream of American life and the mainstream of world affairs. I feel very deeply, too, that we need alternatives, that we cannot be just in the negative. The American people want positive solutions for enormously complex problems, and we must give them those positive solutions. I hazard the guess that Senator Goldwater and I will pretty definitely disagree on a good many of these solutions, but I also state that that's good for my party. It's lively, it will provoke discussion, and it will enable us to put our best foot forward in terms of serving the American people. Our objective has got to be to win the next national election because we deserve to win it and can do the best job for the United States and the free world.
You've heard the issues, now for the answers. Here to explore the issues with Senators Goldwater and Javits are Bob Clark, ABC Capitol Hill correspondent, and his colleague Peter Clapper, ABC Washington political commentator, with the first question.
Well, Senator Goldwater, you represent one wing of the party, and Senator Javits, of course, represents the other. I'd like to start off the questioning by asking you, which way is the party headed, toward conservatism or toward the less conservative liberal wing?
Well, I think generally the party across the United States is heading towards the conservative position. Now, I will readily recognize that there are portions of the United States, particularly here on the eastern seaboard, where we're going to have to look to liberal Republicans for victories in 1962 and possibly 64. But by and large, out across the United States, conservatism is stronger than liberalism, and I think this was reflected in the vote that Nixon got, which was some 6 or 7 million more than we have known Republicans, while at the same time Kennedy is still looking around for 14 or 15 million Democrats that he didn't get. Certainly the person who was looking for the more conservative of the two candidates would have voted for Nixon. I think that was the indication in the 60 election, plus the overwhelming success that we had across the United States with conservative candidates.
Well, Senator Javits, if I may answer that question, too. I believe we're going in the progressive direction because unless we do, we will not win a national election. And the best proof of that is the fact that whenever you get the Republicans together in a national conclave beginning in 1940, they don't come up with a conservative Republican. They come up with a progressive or, at the worst, the middle-of-the-road Republican. And they come up with a platform which is very strong on civil rights, which is very strong on participation in the leadership of the free world, which has alternatives to the Democrats, which the government participates in programs like housing and health and Social Security, the very indicia of what is called the progressive Republican cause. I think that Senator Goldwater there is under an illusion, and that's one of the great differences between us. We lost the last election because we didn't carry the big states, and we didn't carry the big cities. And those are the places where progressive Republicanism, in my view, can carry the day. Let me give you one of the figures, because I think they're very important. The Republicans need to carry the big cities if they're going to win. There are 40 cities with populations over 300,000. In the last election, we carried 14. Eisenhower carried a majority of them. Somehow or other, the public didn't take to the fact that Nixon carried this, what I call the progressive idea, and what Eisenhower called the middle-of-the-road idea. So I think that if we want to be a national party, we want to get away from just being a minority party, and I think where Senator Goldwater would lead us would be toward being a permanent minority party. If we want to be a national party, then we've got to travel this progressive route.
Might I butt in there and point out that it's true that the Republican Party has come out of convention since 1940, 1936, as far as that goes, with so-called liberal candidates, and we haven't won elections. We've come out also with platforms that are quite similar to the Democratic platform, and we haven't won. We won with Eisenhower, but I don't think either one of us could sit here and argue that Eisenhower's victory, particularly in 52, was a Republican victory. It was an Eisenhower victory. Now, your comment about the big cities to me is a very interesting one, because I had the mayor of one of our big cities put this question to me one night. He said, "Senator, name me real fast one big city that the Republicans have control of the city administration." And that, to me, is the issue that we have to solve relative to the cities. When you can hand out 20, 50, or 75,000 jobs, you know as well as I do as a practicing politician that on election morning, we have the odds against us. We've got to start to work and take these city organizations. By the same token that you recite the failure in the North, we carried 42 out of the 53 big cities in the South and lost in the rural areas.
Well, the point about our not winning elections is a very interesting one, Barry, in terms of our platform and when we get together and do the job that we're supposed to do. Of course, the alternative isn't just winning or losing. The alternative is to lose disastrously, as Landon's did, and other very conservative candidates in other years, or to come as close as Nixon did with one little added push if he had made that telephone call with respect to Martin Luther King or some other one little thing in the campaign, he might have done it. Now, the point that I'd like to make with you is this. When I say progressivism, you're going to win big cities only if the image of our party ceases to be the big elephant that's holding back in the path of progress, that is not driving forward. We have some great things in our party. We, for example, the soul of our party is equal opportunity. We ought to be the most vibrant, the most vital, the most luminous force in the country for equal opportunity. Instead, we ourselves, conservatively, often are the ones who hang back in terms of civil rights legislation. We ought to be the fellows who are making American business do the most...
Would you yield? I disagree with you on civil rights. I think that the Republican Party has done more for civil rights in its history by far, by so much far we can't measure it, than the Democratic Party. And I can't find fault with the lack of interest in civil rights in our party at all. In fact, it was under our president that we made the first great gains in civil rights. It wasn't the Republican Party that defeated civil rights as you would like to see it in the Senate. Now, you and I would disagree to a small extent, although we both voted for civil rights. I don't think this is an issue that divides the Republican Party at all.
Let me ask both of you this before we leave the subject of civil rights. Are you satisfied with the way the Kennedy administration has handled the current civil rights issue of the freedom riders in the South?
Well, if I may just address myself to that, I believe that the Attorney General has done precisely the right thing in terms of sending these marshals into Alabama to sustain the law of the United States. The people of Alabama, I think, in the main, would realize themselves, aside from the people who are responsible for anarchy there just the other day, that a citizen is not only a citizen of the state of Alabama, he's also a citizen of the United States with certain rights under the Constitution. Where I think the Kennedy administration has been wrong is in avoiding the Congress. I think the Congress has got to assume its share of the responsibility in legislating on civil rights, or the job isn't going to be done enough to impress the people of states like Alabama that we in the United States mean business on this issue.
Senator Goldwater, do you think the president was right in sending federal marshals into Montgomery?
I think as long as he confined it to federal marshals that he was within his rights. If he had sent federal troops, I think he would have been wrong. I disagreed with Eisenhower sending the troops into Little Rock. I think when local law and order falls down, the first resort should be to the next higher echelon, which would be marshals.
Well, I would not want to let that lay, Barry, without saying, and I know we've been on civil rights some time for a short show, that I sustain the president in Little Rock. I feel that whatever is done to sustain the law of the United States in any state, whatever must be done, that this is the paramount obligation of a president in the country.
Well, there's a constitutional disagreement there that I think transcends the Republican Party or the Democratic Party.
I think that's true.
Senator Javits, do you think that the president might take a firmer stand in the problems down south if he sent a personal emissary down there or did something through the Justice Department?
Well, I might say to you that the two things have occurred to me in that regard. One, the White House conference, which would call in leaders of the Negro community and the white community, not only in the South, but throughout the country. You know, we have some problems here, too. As everybody knows, we've had a New Rochelle school district that a court order had to desegregate. The people there complain about it, but the order had to be made. I think a White House conference would be very good. I think also, and I have a great deal of regard for our vice president, he served as our majority leader, that he barnstormed the South for election, and he did pretty well.
But what did he promise? What did he say down south?
Well, now, Barry, let's come to that.
I was down south.
Perhaps he ought
to... I don't think he was supporting the idea of civil rights.
Well, now, let's put it to the test, which is what I was coming to suggest. Perhaps it might be a good idea to send him on a mission now.
That I'd like to see.
To see if he can calm some of these violences and strong feelings and make people feel that the law of the land is the law he represents.
Why the vice president?
Well, he has a rather special viability in the South, as Senator Goldwater just said. The South helped him become vice president and helped Senator Kennedy become president. And I think he owes the country, therefore, rather an obligation, if he does have that kind of standing, to use it to the greatest advantage in the country's interests.
Senator Gore?
Well, I think, just to sum this up, what the present president said during the campaign, that he would use the full strength of his moral persuasion. Now, I think that's the way you have to get at it. And whatever he terms to be moral persuasion, he should use. I don't like segregation any more than Jack likes it. We get at the problem of solving it in a different way. He would like to use we might call force. I want to see the people do it under what I feel are their rights under the Constitution.
The president
certainly has moral persuasion and has moral power.
Well,
and I found out in campaigning in the South that the vice president has great moral persuasion in the South. Now, I'd like to see him go a step further, as Jack has suggested, and go down now that he's been elected and see what he can do about this. I know what he was promising throughout the South.
You then endorse the Javits proposal?
I've endorsed it in part, but I don't endorse it in toto because I know what he includes that I would not include. I would not include any pushing of this thing from the federal level other than moral persuasion.
Well, now, Barry, I must add one word, though, again, I say we're taking a little more time than perhaps we should on civil rights alone, and that is the use of the word force. I am not for force. I am for law. I believe that law is the vertebrae of enforcing the Constitution and bringing about compliance by the minority, which will not comply unless there is some law.
Let me try you on an openly political question, Senator. We hear three names mentioned most often in Washington as the next Republican presidential candidate: Rockefeller, Nixon, and Goldwater. Would any three of these distinguished Republicans be acceptable to you?
Can I intervene there? I am not a candidate for the nomination, so I want to relieve him of the responsibility of having to comment on me. Believe it or not, I'm not.
Well, but I'm a lawyer, and one of the great adages in the law is that it isn't what the litigants may think the issue is, it's what the judge thinks it is. And I think our questioner is right.
I think I'm the judge.
The country believes that the three leading personalities in our party are Rockefeller, Nixon, and Goldwater. I think this is a very healthy competition for the party. My views are very well known in terms of the progressivism in the party. I supported actively Vice President Nixon. I've supported for the nomination Governor Rockefeller. I feel very strongly that if Governor Rockefeller wins in New York and continues, as I'm sure he will, his record of progressivism, he will be a leading and very strong candidate for the presidency come 1964. As far as Senator Goldwater is concerned, he's on the track and running. I think he appeals, which is, I think, a very important point in terms of our party, because one of the reasons I'm so pleased with our show today is because though we have our differences, we're at one on some fundamentals, and the fundamentals, I think, are very good for our party. And so I welcome this kind of discussion, which is provocative and useful, and I welcome the fact that Senator Goldwater is, though he himself says he isn't, but I think he is, in essence, one of the leading personalities the country is considering, though I do feel that his philosophy has an appeal which is narrower than what we need to win a national election, and I say that to him frankly.
Well, I might comment on that. My appeal seems to be working, whether it's not Goldwater's appeal, but the conservative appeal certainly worked in Texas, it's worked in Pennsylvania, it's worked in Tennessee, and I honestly feel, Jack, in reference to the words you keep using, progressive, that there has been nothing progressive about the liberal movement. In fact, we find our economy today not moving forward at the rate that any of us will recognize it should be moving at, and I believe that's because we have restricted the free enterprise system so long with high taxes, with government regulations that have been brought about in part by the liberal idea of the welfare state, that our economy, to move forward properly, is going to have a complete turnaround, so to speak, of the thinking at the top. Now, the Republican Party has been guilty of this to a lesser degree. I remember once I called the Eisenhower program the Dime Store New Deal. I admit I did it in a moment of probably a little bit of anger, but as I think it over, that's what we offered. We offered a little less. We haven't offered any alternative. Now, what I'd like to do, in all fairness to conservatives and liberals, radicals, progressives, whatever you want to call the other team, is to present to the American people in 1962 and 1964 and 1966 the choice between a conservative philosophy, and my conservative philosophy, whether you believe it or not, doesn't go back to anything. I don't want to even go back to this morning, except for the pleasant memories of stopping in Chicago and Detroit. I want to go forward and keep going forward, but I don't want to try these hackneyed, proven wrong ideas that didn't work in the 1930s, that we're trying again in the 1960s, and with all due respects to your party and mine, we tried too much of it in the 8 years that we were in.
Well, now you've put your finger on something that's very important, because you've shown what I do not think is fair to what I call progressivism, a complete confusion between that and the liberal democratic idea of which you feel that Republican progressives are a pale imitation. Now, that is untrue, and for this reason. Republican progressives feel that you must do some of the basic things in housing and in health and in other welfare areas where government does fit in the modern complex society. But that is not the main point. The main point that Republican progressives feel is that you've got to get business, American business, the private economic system, to operate in the public interest, to operate in terms of trusteeship to its stockholders and its workers, to operate in those terms in terms of education, in terms of the right to shift pension rights from business to business, in terms of automation, in terms of helping people with retraining and refinancing in order to accommodate automation, in order to accommodate, if you will, a liberal export and import policy. Now, these are all things which our party has not done. I want our party to advance along those lines. It hasn't done that.
All that I, as a conservative, say is exactly what you say, only you feel for some mysterious reason, after years and years of success with the free enterprise system and with a minimum of government, that we suddenly have to control the free enterprise system and start controlling the individual.
No,
I say we don't.
Now, as a practical matter, Barry, again, there's this confusion. On depreciation, yes, I'm all with you. On obsolescence, yes, I'm all with you. On the tax policy to permit of automation, I'm all with you. But I'm not with you that you can just leave to business health and housing and education, because the breakdown in the 30s was because business didn't do it. Business wouldn't do it. It's only when the government coordinates these activities to enable business to do it that it gets done. That's why Republicans, now just let me finish, that's why Republicans are priding themselves on expanding the Social Security system. Under Eisenhower, it was expanded to include 12 million more people. Now you take this health thing that we went through. That is medical care for the aged. My program for that includes the private enterprise system. It allows people to have voluntary plans as coordinated by government. Government gives it form, it gives it content, and it takes care of those cases where the private enterprise system, because of lack of coordination, just will not do it. As yet, our business leaders have not become Solons, have not become real leaders in the public interest, and that's one of the big places where the Republican Party can help.
Well, Jack,
but if you exclude the Republican, if you exclude our philosophy entirely from any role by government, then you would deprive us of one of the greatest coordinating media of the 20th century for what I consider to be purely doctrinaire.
Well, Jack, we tried all that in the 1930s, and in fact, we were the last nation in the world to come out of a worldwide depression, and the sole reason we can give to that is that the federal government would not allow the free enterprise system to operate as freely as it should.
Even today,
after Dr. Heller, President Kennedy's chief economic advisor, in 51 told the Germans precisely the type of thing that you're telling me and that he's telling the president, and the Germans told them no, the Germans today have the fastest, most vibrant growing economy in the world. And we, the great economic leaders of the world, are sort of hopping along like a sick crab going up a sandhill.
But Germany is one of the most socialized states in the world, and all of these things we've been talking about, including the fact that Germany has practically no antitrust laws. And in addition to that, Barry, in 1932, the banks were closed.
Who closed them? They didn't have to be closed.
They had to close.
No, they didn't
Why, Barry, you're just living in an unreal world.
Well, I'm not either.
I was
in the process of selling a business to help get the bank over the hump.
But I was in New York seeing the runs on the banks. They have destroyed your economic
system. I think history proves we didn't have to close the bank, and that gets me to a point that we should have probably been talking about. We're living under the same kind of an approach in the 1960s now that we lived under in the 1930s. Crisis after crisis after crisis put up by Roosevelt in the 30s, Kennedy in the 60s.
Well,
and that's
Barry,
the thing,
you
know, I think we have
there
to
are
retain.
Russians in Europe, and they control 900 million people, and they're very tough opponents, and they're destroying the world
that's
with
right.
their philosophy. Don't let's forget about
I
them.
Won't, because we helped get them there.
Well,
whether you like to admit it or not, our soft, weak-kneed policy since Versailles has certainly helped put 1 billion people under the communist orbit, a greater growth of a philosophy than even Christianity.
But the answer is that these 1 billion people who are still in the free world are looking to us for some kind of redemption, and we can't give them the narrowness of not being willing to help them by way of redemption and tell them, go help yourself under the private enterprise.
There's nothing narrow in the concept that the conservative has. In fact, I think my concept of helping people is probably broader than yours. I just want to quit giving this money away in bags and sort of have some control over it, like the technical assistance program. I wouldn't care if we doubled that. Put more people around the world where we can show other people how we do things with our hands, but
people,
quit giving them the money.
But people need money for roads and ports and health and education.
Right, we've lost friends, we haven't bought them.
I'm sorry, we'd have lost a great many more, and we'd have lost the world
if we couldn't lose many more, we wouldn't be in business.
I hate to interrupt this very stimulating discussion. Thank you, Senator Goldwater and Senator Javits, for being with us.
You have heard another in ABC's headline-making series in which leading authorities bring you answers to the issues of today. Issues and Answers is produced by Peggy Whedon. Assistant to the producer, Alan Hofford. A presentation of ABC News and Public Affairs.